Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Welcome to today's program, everybody. On the phone today, we have Troy Ball, founder of Troy & Sons Whiskey Distillery. She's an author and a mother, and a recent owner of a vineyard. Troy is known to be the very first woman to found a whiskey distillery in modern times. So we're talking to a very special celebrity here, folks. Troy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chuck. I don't know if celebrity is the right word, but
of course you are.
I was daring, I'll tell you that.
It's an interesting thing to listen to people like yourself who act as a pioneer in certain areas. And so today we're really interested in who you are and where you came from and how you came to be where you are, Troy.
Chuck, I grew up in Texas and fortunately had the good luck to move on to a family farm when I was in middle school or just entering high school. And I also had a father who believed, you know, I should be able to do everything on the farm he could do. So I, as a young child, learned to drive tractors and use hand tools and dig post holes and paint and do all those things that get done on a farm. Later on in life, I realized that was an enormous gift to me because it empowered me in a way that when I was an adult and I got this crazy idea to learn how to make whiskey, I wasn't intimidated by the process because I figured I could work my way through it. And if I had the right instructors, most of whom came from Madison County, by the way, I would be able to figure it out. I started out with this background of being very hands-on. I was a horse kid and pretty fearless, I would say. I went off to college. I was the first person in my family to get a college degree. And I was going to take on the world. I was going to be a businesswoman somehow. I didn't know what exactly, but I was bent that way. You know, I wanted to do something in business. And unfortunately, I had married right after college, and my first son was born 10 months after we were married. And he ended up being born with a genetic disorder that we didn't figure out, and we still have not figured out some 30 years later. So that changed my life. At the time he was born, they thought his condition was birth-related. So 2 years later, I had our second son, and we went to extreme precautions to be sure he was born safely. And at 4 months of age, he developed seizures and fails to thrive as his older brother had. So that changed my life. You know, my job now needed to be keeping these two boys alive and doing everything I could to give them an advantage to try to progress. And that was a monumental undertaking, at the least. Both of the boys were very, very medically fragile and required 24-hour attention just about. So I was never sleeping, and they often would have seizures in the night, and I was up and down all night long and saying my prayers dutifully and trying to get them to the best people around the country that might be able to help them. And I just had to watch my friends go on with their lives, raising healthy children and developing careers of their own. It was a tough thing to watch your children not be able to learn to walk or learn to talk. And it shapes your life, as you can imagine. In my case, it made me very, very strong because I had to fight for their rights. I had to fight for their ability to go places and do things. And I'd say it fashioned me into being someone who wasn't easily discouraged and who was determined to try to make something happen. We discovered Western North Carolina in about 2003. We had been living in Austin, Texas prior to that, and we just were in and out of hospitals. It was terrible. Mostly, I started to see this pattern where each fall, one of the boys would get really ill because we'd have very bad allergies in October, November, December, January in Austin, and then they would get a cold virus, and that would turn into a pneumonia just in a snap. So my son, older son, Marshall, stopped breathing in an ambulance in 2003. Fortunately, they revived him. And I said to my husband, Charlie, I said, you know what? We have got to try living someplace else. I'll never forgive myself if he dies or one of the boys dies. And we didn't try being in a different environment. So we did an internet search of the best small towns in America, and we discovered Asheville. And in 2004, we packed up and moved into Asheville, and that was the beginning of the change in my life and the change in the boys' health.
So they're doing much better here in the mountains?
They've been healthier here than they've ever been in their lives. And, you know, Chuck, I was told that the boys probably wouldn't live past the age of 10. And Marshall just celebrated his 31st birthday.
Wow.
That's amazing.
It is. It also speaks to the care you've been able to give them.
I try. We have found some great people to help us here, care for the boys. And really, we got the best opportunity for them to have some support and care once we moved to North Carolina. They still live at home, of course, but I, for the first time in my life, had the ability to think about doing something different. That different became moonshine making, if you can believe it or not.
I've been watching the phenomenon of your business over the years you've been here. You may recall I was down visiting, I think, shortly after you opened there in Asheville with our French Broad Vignerons group, one meeting we had there. You have been absolutely a phenomenal marketing machine. I have to tell everybody, if you want to learn something about marketing, you watch that woman. She knows how it's done.
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't know if I know how it's done, but I think the story was so fascinating. You know, it just attracted attention. I mean, moonshine was on the market, really wasn't common in 2008 when I first got involved in learning to make moonshine. And so when a woman came along who was going to open a legal distillery with moonshine as her first product to be released, that was easy for the press to notice. So I don't want to take any credit.
As an observer watching a business grow, there were two things that stand out in what you've done over the others. And I've watched the others. You brought a sort of class to that whole area of moonshine. And I saw that you do a lot of marketing with high-end restaurants and that sort of thing, making special mixed drinks and so forth. So you've brought it to a whole new level that this country's never seen before. So you've done a phenomenal job.
Thank you, Chuck. You know, what I realized was that we had this knowledge in the mountains of making a really excellent quality white whiskey or moonshine. And I got to thinking, why in the world aren't we making American cocktails? Why are we drinking Russian cocktails? Why are we drinking tequila? You know, those are fine products, but the lion's share of the market in mixed drinks is our vodka cocktails. And I thought, you know, we have a very beautiful white spirit when it's well made, and we could be using that to make great cocktails. I learned actually from some of the old guys up there in the mountains that they knew that there was a sweet spot in the distillation process. And that sweet spot, of course, is right in the middle when you're not running heads at the beginning of a distillation and you're not running tails at the end of a distillation. And so you've basically eliminated most of the toxins and you're just grabbing the heart out of the middle. I call it the pure heart. And so when you take the pure heart and you bottle that or you age it, you get beautiful, smooth whiskey and beautiful cocktails. I think I was one of the early people to realize that that was a possibility in the American marketplace. And I went down to Disney. I said, you know what? I want to talk to these folks about making a moonshine cocktail. And they're like, Disney is not going to talk to you, lady. Moonshine is evil stuff. It'll make you go blind. You're a safe, healthy company. And I said, no, you don't understand. I said, moonshine is the quintessential American spirit. When it's well made, it's a beautiful product. And I think that Disney's the quintessential American company. So they need to take a look at this. So finally, one of the managers at one of the big resorts, the Wilderness Lodge, he was willing to have me come down, and we made some cocktails. And he was just blown away. And he said, you know what, I'll make a request of the corporate offices to put your product on our list so that we can order it. And so he did that, and we created a moonshine mountain margarita that they put on their menu at Wilderness Lodge. And do you know, it became a bestseller for them and still is 5 years later. Isn't that amazing?
It is. That's astounding.
That's one of our success stories that I'm really proud of. My goal in the beginning was to build an awareness around the states, if I could, that these mountain people, they really did know how to make a quality product. That quality product should be elevated. It should be available in good restaurants and at famous places. And these folks should be recognized for the spirit that they were making. And I think we've done a pretty good job of it.
Troy, you've done a phenomenal job. I'm telling you, I've been watching this. And there are certain businesses over the years that I sort of watch and try to model after, and yours is certainly one of them on the marketing end. You've done a phenomenal job. I've noticed over the last couple of years, you made some upgrades in the size of your distillery there. Can you tell me what your current capacity is?
We have a large 5,000-liter still, and it produces about 3 barrels of whiskey per distillation. So rule of thumb is maybe 300 bottles of whiskey per barrel. So we're somewhere around 900 to 1,000 bottles per distillation.
You run your still year-round?
We do. We also produce a product for Tim Smith. I was on the Moonshiners TV show with Tim Smith in 2015 and part of 16. And along the way, he came to us and wanted to know if we would produce his whiskey for him. So we do some other whiskey production in our distillery. Our equipment's far too large for my for my demand at this point, which is great. It helps to pay the bills.
That's a nice problem to have. So we've been on the phone today with distillery founder, author, and mother, Troy Ball. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Bubba's Beer Batter Mix. In a recent radio survey of our listeners, we learned that quite a few are beer batter fans who listen to our program. Nothing tastes better than a good piece of Ivy River catfish fillet dipped in beer batter and deep fried in bear grease. Bubba has raised the bar for good mountain cuisine. He developed a beer batter mix that will cause your taste buds to shout and sing. Next time you have a friend over for a mountain treat, serve up a catfish fillet fried in Bubba's beer batter mix. The ingredients are Bubba's family secret. But after a few beers last spring, after turkey season, Bubba let it slip that his special beer batter mix contains wild ramps, ginseng powder, and some other exotic things he found growing near his farm. Bubba also sells a 1 gallon tin of bear grease for those who want the very best cooking experience. Bubba's beer batter mix and Bubba's bear grease are special products made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy a bag of Bubba's Beer Batter Mix and a gallon tin of Bubba's Bear Grease today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been on the phone today with Troy Ball, distillery founder, author, and mother. Troy, we had talked earlier about some things about you recently acquiring a vineyard here in Western North Carolina. Tell me all about that.
Oh, my gosh, it's the most wonderful thing. I didn't set out to acquire a vineyard. I set out to acquire a pretty farm. As chance would have it, this farm had a vineyard that had been established on it some years back. It, I believe it originally was 5 or 6 acres of vines. Sadly, when the woman's husband died, she found she couldn't take care of it all, and she pulled out some of those vines, like 4 or 5 acres. Today, we just had about a 1 acre vineyard there, and I am a total novice. I don't know anything about vineyards, but I'm inspired and excited because it reminds me a little bit of when I got into the distilling business. So now I get to use my resources. find those individuals out there that, that really understand grapes and vines and learn something new.
Well, certainly it's a different kind of business.
I think it's totally different, although I guess some people have been known to take those grapes and ferment them and distill them. Isn't that right?
I have been known to make a little grappa from time to time.
Well, you know, I have a question for you. I guess grappa is the Italian word for that. Would this also classify as a brandy if you were to distill and ferment grapes?
Yes. One of the things that we have here in North Carolina is no regulations about the use of the word grappa. Grappa in Italy is controlled by the government as a definition, and it's used only in the sense that you can only make grappa from what they call the pomace, or the leftovers, the seeds and skins and so forth, after you make wine. The law says that the wineries have to sell their pomace to these distilleries that make the grappa. In this country, we don't have laws governing that. So if you want to distill the grapes, you can call it grappa. There are a couple places in California and Washington State who do that. And there's also, to my knowledge here, there's no regulation on the brandy part. You can call it brandy if it comes from grapes. Of course, it has to be grappa if it comes from grapes. And if you put brandy into barrels, very much the way you would do some whiskey, charcoal barrels, then after a little while, it will start to turn a little amber color, and it will become more what, like most people think of as brandy. So we have some latitude to play with the grappa and the brandy thing here in North Carolina.
That's great. Well, you know, I have an abundance of barrels. It would be a lot of grape jelly to make, so maybe I better think of something else to do with all those grapes.
There's a lot of people here in North Carolina who ask me about grapes every season. We have a small commercial teaching vineyard here, as you know, at Jewel of the Blue Ridge. And I can never supply enough grapes for people, so there's always a demand for the grapes. But you make your best money if you're going directly from your vineyard to a value-added product. So it's best to go and look at something.
I was fascinated to learn from you, actually, that the sort of nutraceutical industry is interested in these native varieties of grapes as well.
Yes.
So people making cosmetics or supplements and things.
Yeah, we've had Jeannie Dunn on the radio program as an interviewee, I think a couple of years ago. I may have mentioned to you I was on the board of directors of the North Carolina Natural Products Association, and the last 2 years I was there as actually president of the association in order to make the contacts in the nutraceutical industry. And it turns out that there's a niche market out there for grape-based alcohol because people with celiac disease can't use products that are made with grain alcohol because there is just enough carryover in the distillation process that they still get their allergies and have the negative effects for these people. So currently there is nobody locally doing that. They're actually importing it from California, the last that I checked, and I'm in the process of getting up to date on that right now. There's a specific market for that. The other thing for these particular grapes is the resveratrol and antioxidants and so forth of a red muscadine grape here in the mountains contains 40 times the amount of those antioxidants and resveratrol of regular red grapes. So these wild native grapes here, the muscadines, have something wonderful to offer.
Wow. Well, you know, I don't even really exactly know what my grapes are. I think they're scuppernog.
They are.
Scuppernogs probably don't have that high resveratrol because they're a kind of an amber-colored grape, aren't they?
Yes. I think the varieties down there, if I'm not mistaken, you purchased the old Deerhaven farm down there, and they did originally have 5 acres there. And those are all Triumph and Summit scuppernogs.
I see. Okay. And what are they good for? You need to fill me in.
Believe it or not, even the scuppernongs have a very high percentage of antioxidants and so forth that's very useful for the nutraceutical industry. But it makes great wines, makes great juice, makes great jams and jellies and so forth. And, of course, you can distill them. This distillery doesn't know any difference between which grape you've got. So it's still the good ethanol alcohol. It comes out of there with that little hint of that, the flavor, the aroma of the grape.
I love the idea of using the grapes, you know, to to produce a secondary product, something that people can enjoy and use, whether it's an alcohol or it's a healthful face cream, whatever it might be. I think that's amazing, and I love it that just learning about how these grapes do so well in this region. I mean, I really didn't realize that.
Well, one of the things that's quite surprising for me, when I first moved to this region, my wife and I had set up the idea of having a vineyard here. We'd done some research, and we found about 60 grapes that were what we call cold hardy grapes, that were hybrids, and that they would do very well growing here in the mountains. And when we discovered these native wild American grapes, these Catua muscadines, I was absolutely blown away because they're disease resistant, they're drought resistant. We don't spray them with anything. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. And if you try to keep regular grapes alive, you know, like Biltmore and some of the other traditional vineyards, you're going to be spraying, you know, 15 times minimum and usually 24, 25 times a season in order to keep those grapes healthy long enough to harvest them. It's a big, big impact on the environment. And that's why we go all natural, all native here. And these grapes are phenomenal. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal. Why somebody would want to grow regular grapes when you can grow a native grape like this that doesn't require that kind of time and money to maintain is beyond me.
I bet the chemicals cost a lot, too.
Oh, yes.
Think about just the financial savings. And tell me, do the muscadine or let's say native varieties of grapes, do they produce really good wines? I mean, I don't know the history of this.
Well, yes. North Carolina is one of the major wine-producing states going back to Civil War days. And over the years, there's been a number of things that kicked the industry back. We've had prohibition to deal with, and we had some legislative issues to deal with and so forth. But it's finally coming back. Big time. I think North Carolina is now the sixth largest producer of wine and grapes in the United States. And just in the 10 years we've been here, North Carolina has gone from 60 licensed wineries to 216 licensed wineries. So the growth rate is phenomenal. But you can make really good wine. I have tasted some of the best Concord wine, Catawba wines, Niagara wines, muscadine wines. So, yes, you can make great wines out of it.
That's fantastic. You know, sometimes these ratings, rating organizations prove to be valuable for brands. And I'd be curious if any of our North Carolina vineyards have done well in competition. Do you know?
Yes. As you may know, I'm also on the board of the French Broad Vignerons here, which is our local trade association for winemakers and grape growers here in the mountains. And we have been providing the judges. I was training the wine judges and still do for the Asheville Wine and Food Festival every year. And I can tell you that we have some phenomenal winemakers here in North Carolina. We have some gold medal winners, and of course silver and bronze medal winners here, but we have the ability to produce some of the best wines you ever taste here in North Carolina.
Are those muscadine wines?
Yeah, many of them are. I think something like 20% of our submissions this last season was muscadine and scuppernong wines. And I can also tell you, because of the interviews I've done with other people, we've had international competitions where we've had local wineries win gold medals and silver medals in those competitions in California, New York State, even some of them going to Europe. So we have some great winemakers here and great wines that can be produced in North Carolina.
I love hearing that. That's fantastic. And I'm going to enjoy, learning about some of these folks out there and the vineyards out there. And that's going to be something that I'll really enjoy in the future. We produce a very high-rated whiskeys at Torrey & Sons. And it's helped us, you know, to get attention, and I know it helps these vineyards and winemakers to get the products noticed.
The taste is in the glass, and I can tell you with a lot of experience, it ranges back 40 years now, that if you make a good wine, you will sell it. Quality sells in the wine business. Everybody wants to buy it and taste it. And if they taste it and it's good, they will be back. And if they taste it and it's not good, you won't see them again. And the good winemakers in state can't keep inventory. The ones who are making lousy wines, they're constantly complaining. They've got inventory in their warehouse and they can't sell it. And my response to them is always, learn to make good wine, will you?
Yeah, right. I understand that story. It works in the whiskey world, too.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that's exactly the same story. You can either put a lot of care and attention into a product and get an exceptional product or not. And I hear exactly what you're saying.
Next time you're in this neck of the woods, Troy, I'll give you a glass of some of the best muscadine wines in the state and Scuppernong wines.
Oh, my gosh. I can hardly wait. I want to... Well, I mean, I've got this Scuppernong vineyard. I've never even tasted a Scuppernong wine. It's going to be fun.
We have some outstanding Scuppernong winemakers here in the state. We have dry as well as the sweet variety that everybody thinks of muscadines and Scuppernongs as being a sweet wine. But let me tell you, if you've ever had a really well-made dry one, it'll knock your socks off.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that visit, Chuck. Thank you.
Well, folks, we've been on the phone today with Troy Ball, who's the founder of Troy & Sons Whiskey Distillery in Asheville, North Carolina. Troy, tell us about how can we find you? How can we find your products?
We'd love to have everyone come visit the distillery. We're open for tours on Fridays and Saturdays at 5 and 6 p.m. And you get to tour the distillery and sample the different whiskeys that we make. There's about 5 products that we make, so you can choose what you'd like to taste. And my personal story of raising my boys and then founding the distillery was just published in a book called Pure Heart, A Spirited Tale of Grace Britton Whiskey. And it's available in local bookstores or you can order it online. I'm also at troyball.com. There's a lot of information about my life and in my business. And I'm always happy to talk to folks who just want to reach out to me, who are parents of special needs children or who are thinking about getting into the whiskey business or writing a book. I'm happy to speak with people. So they can reach out to me through troyball.com or troyandsons.com. We're, of course, on Facebook and Twitter under the name Troy and Sons. And my personal pages are Troy Ball. And I look forward to visiting with folks from your area.
What's your address there in Asheville?
We're at 12 Old Charlotte Highway, which is just right off of 240 at exit 8, and we're adjacent to Highland Brewing Company. So if you like to go up and you can visit a distillery and brewery on the same day and hear a little live music, that's the place to come.
Sounds like just a good place for a two-fisted drinker.
Well, yeah, we recommend caution. But anyway, I would love to have anybody come up and visit, so... And I tell you, I owe a debt of gratitude to some of my friends from Madison County who actually took me under their arm and taught me how to distill whiskey. So that's my old stomping ground, and I'm indebted to some of those guys up there.
Well, Troy, we certainly enjoyed having you on the radio show today. We hope that you'll take advantage to with this vineyard opportunity you're working on right now to come back and visit us another time and let us know how that's working out.
Absolutely, I will. Thank you so much, Chuck.
Well, folks, we're going to call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!